to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Annie.
And I'm Dave. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
So today we're doing the 2014 version of Hercules, which I have to say, until Annie suggested it for the podcast, I'd never even heard of. So
when we mentioned it to various other people since then, none of them have ever heard of it either. So I was quite pleased to discover that it did actually exist and I hadn't just made it up in my head.
So why did you suddenly think of it and choose it for the podcast?
Because we were re-watching the Kung Fu Panda series in preparation for Kung Fu Panda 4 coming out. And Ian McShane, and I'm going to get it wrong again, because at the end of the Court Jester episode I said that he voiced Shifu, but he didn't, because that's Dustin Hoffman. Tai Lung? Is that the name of the tiger?
Yes.
In the first episode,
first film,
he voiced Tai Lung.
He's
obviously having a huge amount of fun. And it reminded me of having watched this film in the cinema, which I did. I must have gone on my own, because nobody we know has ever heard of this movie. And
I think you've manifested this movie.
I manifested it out of my brain. Yeah. And it was, I remember it being better than this time around. So, but anyway, I remembered Ian McShane being in it and obviously having the time of his life and really enjoying his resurgence into film stuff. And so I thought it might be fun if you had never heard of it. So what did you think overall? I was sitting next to you on the sofa most of the way through you watching it with your headphones in, so I kind of think you enjoyed it.
So when you say you thought it was better when you saw it in the cinema than when you've watched it this time around, is that your overall kind of thing? But I've been affected by what I can only assume is some kind of powerful evil magics. That I have been thoroughly ensorcelled by this movie. And at this moment in time, and I guarantee you that before the end of today, never mind by tomorrow, my opinion will have changed. But by now, it is one of the best films ever made.
Okay, that is quite strange. Because I remember thinking that the first time around, and I didn't think it this time around. So it obviously, the magic only works the first time. And then it's done.
That's possibly true. Right now,
there's definitely a story in that.
Right now, I desperately want to organise an evening with a wide variety of people we know, popcorn and alcohol, and then put this on for like 20 people.
Well, the alcohol may be important. I mean, you didn't drink any today,
no.
But I did write in my notes, not as silly as I remembered, was I drunk?
In the cinema.
Well, I mean, it has been known.
You dear.
So, I don't know. Evidently, it does have some ensorcelling force behind it, but it only works the first time. I mean, I didn't hate it this time around.
I think you have to arrive with a certain openness. This is very, very...
Possibly my expectations were too high.
Mm. This is very, very much the kind of films that I used to watch constantly when I was in my early 20s.
See, you keep going on about, you know, how my ick threshold is much higher than yours. And I was worried. I was watching it. I was thinking, wow, I don't remember it being this gory. And I thought you'd really struggle.
But somehow, it's very not real in this, in the same way that it is in, like, Lord of the Rings. You know, because it's just nothing. You can't take any of this seriously.
Well, that's certainly true.
I mean, you can't take it seriously really from the moment that they cast Dwayne Johnson.
He has his moments.
He lives in a world of larger than life meta-ness.
Well, that's
and,
true.
And
but
all of his things are kind of slightly pantomime-esque. So although there's a lot of violence in this, it doesn't have any real effect on me because it's very not real.
did the emotional beats have an effect on you? Because it was a lot darker than I remembered as well.
Really? Mostly it was a combination of epic and funny.
Well, anyway.
So I didn't really get any strong emotional beats from it all because I wasn't engaging with it like that.
We'll get into that.
I was engaging
later.
With it like as a spectacle.
Well, fair enough. Do you want to give a brief synopsis for anyone who hasn't seen it, which is basically everyone except me?
Apparently. Hercules, the great Athenian legend, and his band of awesome dudes are hired...
And one lady.
A lady could be a dude.
That's true.
Hired by John Hurt to protect the kingdom of Thrace from a bad dude called Rhesus. It turns out that John Hurt is also a bad dude who is working with King Unpronounceable Name,
Eurystheus
of Athens, who we learn murdered Hercules' family and subsequently framed him for it, and turns out to be another very bad dude, and many epic fights ensue.
Okay, that's fair. Facts. I discovered it was based on a graphic novel, and
yes.
I can see that.
It's interesting that it was based on a graphic novel by a gentleman called Stephen Moore, who I'd never heard of. It turns out he'd written a lot for 2000 AD, Marvel Comics, and also 40 and Times, which is interesting. Mm. He did a lot of stuff through being a mate of Alan Moore, no
mm-hmm.
relation, known for Watchmen, V for Vendetta, etc. And he was kind of his collaborator, the kind of quiet one in the background, while Alan Moore got like the credit for being the guy out the front.
Okay.
So he did a bunch of stuff with him. So yeah, that's what it was based on.
But he wasn't happy. He didn't want to be credited.
Oh, I didn't see
because
that.
He wasn't going to be paid anything or consulted in any way. So he said, well, don't credit me. And then he died.
Ooh.
And the film came out afterwards and he was credited anyway. And Alan Moore apparently spoke out against this and also complained about the alterations to the source material.
Well, Alan Moore speaks out about almost everything that he or anybody he knows is remotely associated with.
Okay. And everything is always altered when it is adapted, so...
My understanding, and listeners may well know much better than me, but my understanding is it's quite common for Alan Moore to sell the rights to one of the properties that he's written to some film or TV show, and then when it's made, to completely remove himself from any references and say, I can't believe you've done such a terrible job with my thing, thank you very much for the money, and do it again and again and again.
Right.
So
he would have no...
creative control.
No, he would have no reason to complain about the film adaptation of Watchmen because it's basically shot for shot exactly the same as the graphic
novel.
Yes,
yeah, he did anyway.
Okay.
Which
is why I didn't like it, because I was like, this is really boring.
Yes, it's true.
I've seen it all before, literally drawn on a page. Anyway.
What else do you have?
What else do I have? That was it. Oh, it was a box office success, but
well,
nobody
football.
We know has ever heard of it. So I'm very confused as to who all these people were that went to see it in the cinema, of which I was one. Because it's only 10 years old. It's not that long ago.
So shall I go through my things?
Go for it.
So from the top.
Okay.
2014 live action. Not the 1997 Disney Hercules animated film, which
is
what... Wow, is
that 1997? 1997. Oof. I think of that as being one of the modern ones.
If it's useful
Yikes.
To you for future podcasts, I've not seen it.
Yeah, I don't remember being a massive
okay.
fan. It's not one that's stuck in my brain. It has
There's
a cool horse.
A lot of people on the interwebs say it's an unsung great. I've never seen it.
Mm.
So it's obviously not that. It's obviously not the Kevin Sorbo 1995-1999 animated TV series,
yeah.
which I did watch and was it was fine.
Oh,
although,
I was in love with Aeolus.
Although he was very good.
He was
yeah.
great.
Although Xena Warrior Princess was considerably better.
Which I have never seen.
It's on the list.
Oh, okay. Yeah, not for a bit though.
But what it's also not is the Lionsgate Legend of Hercules, which also came out in 2014.
Yes, I read about that.
Directed by Rennie Harlin of Long Kiss Goodnight fame, which, unlike this, absolutely bombed at the box office.
Mm. The other Hercules one.
Yeah.
which I've also never heard of, and also doesn't have anybody in it that I've heard of, whereas this seems to have everybody in it, and what on earth are they all doing?
They're having the world's most amazing time.
Is what they're doing.
We're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but I have never seen a cast in anything have so much fun as the cast in this have had.
Yeah.
All the way through.
Yeah, that is true.
It's just amazing.
That is true. Mostly in McShane and Rufus Sewell, though.
I mean, yes.
Because Rufus Sewell is made of snark.
But everybody, really.
And Ian McShane is very funny.
It was written by a guy called Ryan Condal, who hasn't really written anything of any sort of major import before or since, but is now the showrunner for House of the Dragon, which is the Game of Thrones prequel.
Okay.
So he's now in charge
of... Which nobody ever really watched?
Oh, no, quite a lot of people are watching. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. So he's now showrunning that. It was also co-written by a guy, and I'm terribly sorry about the pronunciation, called Evan Splatopoulos, who is obviously Greek and potentially closer to the story. But, again, not really written anything before or since. It was directed by Brett Ratner, who was best known for doing the Rush Hour series, but hasn't done anything since this because it turns out that he is a terrible, terrible human being.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah, as Annie was saying, it stars Dwayne Johnson, which I thought was going to be a really naff pick and turned out to be amazing.
He's good in most things, not everything.
He's good when he's put in the right films. Yeah, and I thought he was epic for this. I thought this was going to be serious. I thought this was going to be like
Troy. You watched the trailer with me.
I thought it was going to be like Troy or Alexander or something, be a thing. But he's amazing in this. As you say, Ian McShane, Rufus Sewell, Joseph Fiennes.
Yeah.
And John Hurt. John Hurt is so good in this. All of those things. What else we got? Yes, so it was a major box office success. It cost about $100 million. I can see where the money's gone. It earned about $250 million. So it did very well for itself. Although nobody seems to have ever heard of it or remember it anyway.
It's really weird.
It's not got great scores in terms of reviews. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's on 58%. And on Metacritic, it's on 47%.
I think it's about 6 on IMDb.
6%?
No, 6 out of 10.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Right. I have a lot of stuff. Where would you like to start?
Wow, I have very little. I've
got 5 pages of notes.
Okay, well, this is usually the way. I was trying to think of things to say. What have you got?
Can I pick out a couple of random things? And then I've got a big, long list specifically about things related to filmmaking. So, it was educational. I did not know that Hercules means the glory of Hera.
Yes, well, it was. Yeah, I mean, Zeus got around.
As you do.
King golden, of the gods.
Golden rain, large ball, swan. Yeah, well,
exactly. And so, and Hera was
not particularly famously happy about this.
Not very happy about this, mm-hmm. which is reasonable. And so, yeah, Hercules' mother hoped that naming him the glory of Hera would assuage Hera's wrath. But what I find most interesting and most entertaining about this film is how none of the legend stuff is actually true, and there's nothing really supernatural in the film at all.
So we'll have a whole discussion section on that later on, because that is one of the major... Sorry,
I'll just be over here then.
I'd rather... If it's okay with you, I'd rather go through the stuff about the filmmaking and then talk a little bit about the plot and then do that, because I think that's probably the most important discussion in relation to the film.
Okay.
And so I'd like to do it a bit later on, if that's okay.
Sure.
Right. I felt in tone that it was very reminiscent of the Kevin Sorbo TV series.
Well, I thought in tone it was wildly inconsistent, because you've got the joking around, you've got the ridiculous over the topness of everything, and then you've got child corpses lying around and flashbacks to his family being horribly murdered and him thinking that he did it, and all of that I found really hard hitting. And all of the battles I thought were quite gory and not really done in a very entertaining way, and went on way too long. And so, you know, parts of it were, oh God, we're just having another 10-minute battle. And parts of it were, this is really hilarious. And parts of it were, oh my God, this is, like, really emotive and dark.
See, I can see why... I can definitely see why you would think that. But weirdly...
But I'm wrong. Okay,
fair enough. No. Weirdly, and this is why I say I was, you know, ensorcelled by the film.
Yeah.
Because... the bits where you see where, you know, the army's been and there are dead children on the ground, and the bits where his family are murdered, didn't have any emotional impact on me at all. They had a narrative impact, because I could understand how that's, you know, fed into the way that he reacts and the fact that he does this because of stuff. And so I can understand how it narratively fits into the story, but it doesn't have any horror impact to me, because something about the fact that it is... such an over-the-top, pantomime-esque epic has meant for me that the negative emotional beats of the narrative, I've just sailed over them without any kind of impact.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what happened the first time around, because I don't remember any of that. I just remember it being ridiculously silly and wildly entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is for me right now. Yeah. So,
yes, yeah, ensorcelment on first-time viewing.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something interesting in terms of... it is so well directed, and I couldn't tell you why. Because of the way that it speeds you through the story in a way that, at least for me, means you never really have an opportunity to think very much about what's going on.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
The only emotion that I've got from watching this film... is, dude, that's like the only is basically the only thing that I've got from it.
Okay,
can I talk a little bit about filmmaking?
Go for it.
So, really epic location scouting. I've no idea where it was shot, but it looks amazing, although I suspect a lot of it is touched up in the same way as Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
I thought a lot of the cinematography was very Lord of the Rings-esque, especially where they panned over scenic areas.
Yeah.
In the big helicopter shots. Like
there was a
Lord
very
of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings moment towards the end as well.
Which was that?
Taddeus's death was very, very reminiscent of Boromir's death.
Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Fellowship.
Yeah.
Also
yeah.
with him, you know, full protecting the and protecting the little boy where Boromir was protecting Merry and Pippin.
Oh yeah.
Was very, very similar.
I haven't got the remotest idea of how actually realistic any of it is, but it looks amazing. It is so good. The way that they built all of the virtual infrastructure of the cities just looks absolutely fantastic. But when they arrive at Thrace and everything is sunny and golden and bright marble and whatever, and then later on in the plot when they leave Thrace and everything's been shot through a kind of grey-blue filter and everything is dark and gloomy and they want to thing.
Yeah,
it's
interesting because when they do the flashback to him in Athens, Athens is incredibly bright and white.
Oh, is it?
And crisp. Yeah, and all the columns are very white, and there's lots of marble everywhere, and there's a big contrast somehow.
There's a little bit of dramatic weather when they go to do one of the fights, where they're standing on a battlefield, and if you look in the direction of Hercules' army, it's bright sunshine, and if you look in the direction of the other army, they're underneath this massive storm clouds, and, they're in the same place, which is just really amusing.
That is very funny.
Just to call out a bunch of people involved in the thing, not by name because I don't know who they are, but the costumes are top notch.
Yeah.
All the way through, I thought the costuming, the armour, all the stuff they'd done for that, the weapons were amazingly good. Again, no idea about the accuracy at all. I thought all of the like practical effects were excellent. Going back to the special effects again, there's a bunch of monsters. So there's a hydra, there's the giant lion and boar, there's some centaurs. All of those are some of the best monster effects I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's very
good. Absolutely stunning. There's a bit at the end where he's attacked by wolves, and they're more of a practical effect that he's interacting with. They're not so good. But all the completely CGI monsters are just, oh, brilliant. And then the stunt work is a combination of stunt work and, again, CGI. There's some really good fight scenes. Choreography there is excellent. There's a lovely tiny little bit where the woman archer,
Atalanta,
thank you, does a bit.
She's, amusingly, because the actress is Scandinavian, she's basically the only person who I can remember the character name rather than the actor name.
Oh.
And the character name is easier to pronounce.
Right. There's a lovely little bit, I think, where they're on the middle of a battlefield. She's bending down, I think, to pick up some arrows while simultaneously kicking somebody behind her in the head. In just very little tiny flip shot. That is just, you know, little tiny things like that were great. There's a really good stunt where some people get flipped out of a chariot. There's a really great bit where you think Ian McShane's going to die because there's this massive load of flaming arrows coming towards him and they all basically land round him. And there's a bit where there's a guy running towards Hercules, riding towards Hercules with his sword out. And Hercules drops his club, waits for him to get close to him, and then picks up the horse and throws it.
Yeah, that really made me wince. That was quite upsetting.
I mean, there's
a lot of really, really beautiful horses in this film, and then there's an awful lot of horses that, in the story, at least, probably die. And that was quite harsh. But it is quite amusing because you have a cavalry charge against the Hercules forces, and Atalanta and various other people are firing arrows at them, and it's the classic horse move where the person on the horse gets shot and they pull the horse's head to the side and the horse falls over, and every single horse in the charge falls over in exactly the same way because that's how horses are trained to fall over, and it just looks so stupid. Not least because horses don't fall over because their riders have been shot, and also because they all fall over in exactly the same way. So it's not great, but yes, the horses don't come out of it that well.
But I thought the horse throwing thing was amazing because it was so completely unrealistic in every possible way, so you can appreciate the daftness of it.
True.
Is so cool. But as I said to you earlier, you know, if it was being remotely realistic, people would have been attacking the horses because they're bigger targets.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, there's some things that were slightly less good. Yeah, so Hercules is hired by
John Hurt.
What's his name?
Lord Cotys.
Oh, excellent. Who we discover later is only the king of Thrace because he killed the previous one?
Yeah, well, the previous one was his son-in-law. And he killed him and took over. And
right.
He's now keeping his daughter.
Oh, so his daughter,
like, under wraps by threatening the heir.
So the
and planning to bring the heir up to be evil.
So his daughter married the king?
Yes.
Then he killed the king.
And then he killed the king, and took over.
Okay, right. So he basically hires Hercules, and this is part of the whole bit about legends and truth and supernatural stuff. I'll get to you later. Hercules is the lead of a mercenary band.
Yes.
And one of the things that's interesting about the mercenary band is they're from all over the place.
Yeah.
They're, each one is like, you know, the last surviving member of thing.
Yeah. And he's kind of collected them along the way during his various campaigns.
And they've all got their own, you know,
tragic backstory.
Tragic backstories and special powers. Do you want to run?
Found family, bonds of loyalty, absolutely love it. Great tropes.
Do you want to do the special powers briefly?
Special powers? No. Oh, yes. So Atalanta is an Amazonian archer.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's a fantastic archer, although never-ending quiver arrows is, you know, like never running out of
bullets.
Well,
you do see her picking the arrows back up out of the corpses at the end.
Occasionally.
Yeah. Rufus Sewell, or Autolycus, throws daggers. And he seems to have a never-ending supply of daggers as well.
Is that the name of one of the characters from Ulysses 20, whatever it was.
Or Autolycus, probably.
Oh, okay. I think I've heard the name.
Well, Telemachus is...
Telemachus. Yeah, ah, that's okay.
Or Autolycus. Then you've got... I want to look his name up because it's pretty cool. Amphirius is Ian McShane. He's got a spear.
He has all the toys.
He has all the toys, and he's also supposedly a seer, but that we'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that. The thing with all the toys, he's got a spear that has bits that flick out the side. He's also got, at one point, a chariot that has blades that shoot out the side, so he can mow through people. These are only ever seen once, so they're never seen again. But he's got these silly toys.
And then there's Thaddeus, who they picked up off a battlefield as a child, who has a lot of scars and doesn't talk and is obviously very traumatised, and I would describe perhaps as a berserker.
He
tends to kind of like scream and run into battle.
He's
drop
kind
his
of,
axes and just rip people apart.
He's kind of
with
feral.
His bare hands. Yeah, he's kind of feral. But, you know, he's very cool, and he does have a very heroic death, and there is a moment where he dies in Hercules' arms at the end that made me tear up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the bond between them is very strong.
Well, we may as well do that now.
Lots of bonds of loyalty.
He doesn't speak until right at the end when he's been filled full of
arrows.
And
then he says, Hercules, at the end, and, you know, everybody cries.
Mm-hmm.
It was very sweet.
But anyway, Hercules, thank you for the recap of the mercenaries, who are possibly best known for getting to where the big shield wall of all the thousands of soldiers are on their side and then standing in front of it between them and the enemy, which is possibly not the best place to be.
That's fair.
But yeah, so they're hired by evil John Hurt, as it turns out. He seems like very nice John Hurt for the first, you know, three quarters of the film, and then becomes suddenly evil, and he obviously loves being evil.
Oh yes.
Much more than being nice.
Absolutely.
Oh, so cool.
What's your point?
I did have one, which is that they're hired to train John Hurt's army of farmers, in inverted commas, at Thrace, who have no skill. And the first time that they go into combat, a lot of them die. Hercules says, you know, to John Hurt, before they roll out, he says, I need X number of weeks or months to train them, and John Hurt's like, nah, we'll just go and do it now, it'll all be fine. But my point that I'm getting to is that, considering that they have no, like, skill at this point, they have an awful lot of incredibly nice kit.
They do, that's true.
They have awesome armour and swords and chariots and all this stuff, despite the fact that, you know, they're just, we're told, a bunch of farmers.
Yeah.
And so where will this kit come from?
And half of them die in the battle a third of the way through, and then there's suddenly twice as many of them.
Yes, there is.
In the battle towards the end.
There is quite a lot of that. They originally go off to fight this, brigand?
Warlord. Warlord Rhesus.
And his guys are basically Pictish, bald, covered in tattoos.
And body paint.
And there's thousands of them.
Yeah, they just seem
they
to keep
just
coming
go
out
on and on and on.
On and on.
And they're almost... Forever. I didn't check to see how many of them there actually were in terms of stunt people.
Mm.
Because they all look the same. They're all tall and thin and bald. I think there might only be like six of them. They just clone them over and over and over again.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, just briefly, that there are some bits that are obviously done with Massive or equivalent, which is the thing they created in Lord of the Rings, the CGI tool for making big armies.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some bits where they've obviously, and again, I was saying earlier on, you can see where they spent the money, where they've just got a lot of extras.
Yeah.
Because there are some bits where I'm 90% sure they've got a relatively close-up shot of the key characters and then like 200 people standing behind them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they've got a lot of people involved in this, and they've got, you know, big shields and all stuff, so
they've
spent a lot of money on kit. What we were saying before about emotional beats also ties into the fact that when they fight Rhesus and lose, would you say they lost?
Well, no, because they do manage to save half their people eventually.
But do they defeat Rhesus? I can't remember. But
no, not in that one. They defeat him in the second one. In the second battle, they have two battles against Rhesus.
Oh, I forgot. So, there's obviously a lot of dead people on their side, because the point is that they haven't done the all-important
training montage. Training montage comes after the first battle,
which we'll come into in a minute. But unlike Game of Thrones, which is when it becomes much too real for me, in this, lots of dead people on our side, in inverted commas, but there's no injured or dying people.
Right.
You're either alive or you're dead.
Yes, that's a good point. That is a good point, actually. Yes, because it's the same with me.
Because in Game of Thrones, they showed the aftermath of a battle with lots of people injured.
Extended agony is the problem. Yeah. Yes, so very true.
That was the point. So, yes, then they go and have training montage and lots of teaching people how to, you know, be in a shield wall and not fall over, and various other comedy moments.
Yeah.
And then they go and fight Rhysys for the second time and win.
Well, that's when Rhysys tells them that they've been on the wrong side all along.
Oh, in my notes it says, ah, the bait and switch.
Yes.
John Hurt suddenly evil.
It was a bit of a turnaround, absolutely.
Yeah.
They discover that they've actually been fighting on the wrong side, but he then gives them the money anyway.
Mm.
And Autolycus just goes, excellent, I'll be off. No, Rufus Sewell.
Rufus Sewell, sorry, yes.
I'll be off. And everybody else is like, no, we must stay and sort it out. And he's like, okay, I'll just take everybody's gold and disappear.
Yeah.
Then, of course, he comes back.
And then
to the
he does the...
saves everybody.
Han Solo.
Yes.
I'll fly
back
in at the last minute and save everybody, which is going to be obvious for the second that he left.
Well,
but it was still amusing. The only downside to this is that there's a few, not a lot, but there are a few bits of flat-out exposition. There's maybe three or four or five bits where people just tell you the plot straight by talking to another character.
True.
One of them is there's a voiceover introduction to Hercules right at the start of the film where they describe him doing the 12 tasks as if they were supernatural, which we'll come to in a minute. And then later, describe also his companions to a little bit of extent. But then when they meet up with John Hurt for the first time, he reintroduces the companions again for a second time and essentially...
No, because there isn't... because in the opening section, Aeolus is telling the story as if he's done it all himself on his own.
Oh,
and then when he's fighting, because it turns out Aeolus has been captured.
Aeolus is his nephew.
To the bad guys. Yeah, and we haven't mentioned him.
And he's the...
His superpower is that he's Chaucer from A Knight's Tale.
Yeah, so he's never allowed to fight because he is, you know...
He's the PR guy.
And then...
And he's describing as if Hercules is doing it all on his own.
Yeah, fair.
And while Hercules is fighting his way to rescue him and being helped along the way by all of the people who are in the shadows, and the only person that you actually see doing stuff is Hercules. So he's pretending that there aren't any companions.
Yes, fair. So, but when they get to Thrace...
Yeah,
Evil King does introduce them. Evil King John Hurt introduces all the people. That's a bit of exposition heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So many places I want to go to simultaneously. I really liked, this is jumping to a random bit, that in the closing credits, they have an animation version of the 12 Tasks of Hercules.
Mm.
But this time, it's showing how he did them all in combination with the other people.
Yes.
And
how the
things that they were doing were the only reasons why he managed to achieve
them. So they built up all the legends, but they're not actually true.
And so that was really good. And then we get kind of a moment like the cop at the end of Die Hard, which I don't know if you remember. There's this whole bit where the audience is like, yay, he hasn't been able to shoot anybody for years because of trauma, and now he's managed to kill the bad guy with his gun. Isn't it awesome?
Oh, yes.
And in this, all the way through, Aeolus is going, I am not just a teller of stories, I am going to be a warrior. And Hercules is like, no, you go stand at the back where it's safe. And then someone near the back, he's like, I have stabbed a guy in the back. I'm a warrior now. And Hercules is like, yes, you are. And it's like, you stabbed him in the back, dude.
Yeah,
that does
but
not
he,
make you a warrior.
It was to stop him from whoever it was from killing whoever it was. But yes, I take your point. It's
uh-huh.
right. Yeah, fair.
I think the only other thing before really getting on to... talk about the supernatural, not supernatural, legendary bits.
Yeah.
Is there's a whole massive load of really, really excellent dialogue.
Yeah, it's not going to come out without context much, though.
Maybe. But for, I was going to say, what it lacks in, I was going to say pathos, which isn't necessarily the right thing.
No.
What it lacks in, like, I don't know.
Depth.
Depth. Maybe it more than makes up for whoever wrote the
snappy dialogue.
Whoever wrote
they
the dialogue
got a script doctor in
almost
the dialogue.
Certainly did exactly that.
Yeah.
And whoever they got is just
and they,
so
they gave
good.
All the best lines to Rufus Sewell, basically.
Rufus Sewell and Ian McShane.
Ian McShane to a certain
Ian McShane extent. Has this alleged connection to the gods.
Yeah.
And keeps prophesizing when he's going to die and then keeps not dying and
oh,
being
the
quite
best,
annoyed
the
by
best
it.
Moment, the best moment in the whole film is when he said that he's going to die sometime within the next week and there's going to be something to do with flame.
Flaming spear.
Flaming spear. And he's standing on the battlefield and Rhesus's archers let fly a massive volley of flaming arrows and he looks up into the sky and then he's this incredible expression of peace comes over him and he closes his eyes and he just stands with his arms spread looking up into this death and all of the arrows just come down all around him and then eventually he just kind of like opens one eye and is like okay, maybe not then. And it's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And then later on, somebody throws a spear at him, which goes through a flaming torch and bursts
and
into flames.
And he does the same thing.
And he's doing the same thing, and it's just about to hit him, and Hercules just grabs it out of the air as it goes past. And he goes, "Do you mind? That was my moment."
And in Maui epicness, Hercules says...
I don't remember.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yes, that's it. Yes. Oh.
Yes, so that was great.
Rufus Sewell, I'm just going to do a small number of lines. The big speech before they go off into battle, you know, if you are virtuous, you can go to Elysium with...
all the great heroes.
All the great heroes,
legend,
says,
yeah.
says Hercules. And then Rufus Sewell says, oh, if you're really lucky, you can go to Hades where all the fun people are. When he comes back after doing his Han Solo moment, he stabs somebody and then goes, don't just stab there, kill somebody. Oh, Ian McShane knows, he says, that he's going to die sometime soon. He's got this connection to the gods. And Hercules turns around to him and says, are we going to die in this battle that's happening now? And Ian McShane shrugs and goes, well, I'm not, but I don't know about you. Which was... He said, the gods are generous with hints, but very cheap with specifics.
Yes.
Which I thought was
yes,
good.
Yes, absolutely. And then, of course, it turned out that his all his prophecy and whatever is not true because he doesn't die.
Yeah.
So, because I actually wrote down, the legends are false, but the gods and prophecy are real. And then, actually, no, because the prophecy doesn't come true. So,
mm-hmm.
It's actually completely mundane and not supernatural at all, which I really
when...
liked.
And
we're still not going to talk about that. Okay.
In a minute. When they turn up at Thrace and they go up to the general, who I definitely recognise and don't know who the actor is.
No, I don't know
100% either. 100% know the actor. And the general looks at Dwayne Johnson and goes, it's a big honour. But not as big as I thought. Looks him up and down. I thought that was...
Well,
that was
I suppose
cool.
That is the danger of overemphasizing the legend too much, that when he actually turns up, he might end up being a disappointment.
Hercules says to John Hurt's daughter when she comes and says, please save my son, and he's like, find yourself another saviour. And I thought that was good, I like that. But his best line is, there's a bit at the end where there's an advancing army going to kill all the good guys, and he knocks over a great big statue with his awesome super strength. I actually really liked how that worked because cleverly they showed which bits of the statue broke that made it much more realistic to me.
Yeah.
I thought that was really clever.
But
he goes, I am Hercules!
Well, no, that's like... when he's breaking the chains.
Oh,
when
yes.
When he's chained
up. Oh, and Ian McShane.
Ian McShane does the massive speech.
Yeah.
To inspire him to a feat of tremendous strength to break free.
Yeah, Ian McShane basically says... You have to believe. He doesn't say it in anywhere near as few words as this, but he basically says you have to believe that you are the son of Zeus.
Yeah. believe in your own
divinity,
and then you can do anything. Yeah, and I did think it was pretty cool because Hercules is chained. He's got shackles around his wrists that are connected to chains that are then attached to slabs of stone of part of the floor, and he rips the slabs of stone out of the ground, uses the chains with the massive bits of stone on the end as weapons, which I thought was really good.
Where have we seen that before?
And then he is suddenly free of the shackles, and I don't really understand how
he
that
pulls them off with his other hand, which makes no sense. Where have we seen that before?
I don't know.
Which one of the Three Musketeers is the strong one? Porthos.
Okay.
Porthos does that in the Three Musketeers movie.
I had a big problem with the statue bit, and also Autolycus's triumphant return a la Han Solo, because when they come out, they Hercules breaks free, and then he releases he kills the wolves and he releases the others.
Yeah, he's being attacked by a bunch of wolves. He's been having visions of Cerberus. And he thinks that he's seeing into the underworld where his family are, who are all dead.
And then he thinks he killed them.
Mm. And it turns out it's because evil king of Athens drugged him and killed his family using this set of wolves that he now sets on Hercules.
Yeah. So Hercules kills the wolves and then lets everybody else out of the cages and goes and kills the king of Athens.
Yeah.
And then he goes outside to confront John Hurt, and he does this speech to the soldiers saying, your king is a bad person, you should betray him and follow me instead.
Yeah.
And instead of giving any of them even a minute to think about it, Autolycus appears and starts firing daggers at them, and then Hercules drops a giant statue on all of them. Well, so he doesn't really give them a chance to change their minds about what they're doing, and then he kills a ton of them.
I mean, to be fair, he does set a lot of them on fire as well before he
drops
his statue on
them. And then straight up murders the king of Athens, but then I didn't really have much of an issue with that.
And then,
because he was bad.
He's a bad dude.
Bad dude.
And then the other soldiers that are left aren't like, you are a superior ethical person, I shall pledge my allegiance to you. They are like, bloody hell, you've killed most of us, so we're going to pledge our allegiance to you.
Yes, this is very true.
I just want to say before we... Final thing, before we get into the other stuff.
How many final things have there been?
Two more very good final things. One of which
three more things. Okay, four. Five is right out.
Indeed it is. There's a really great line from the King of Athens when he's saying how he is working in collaboration with evil John Hurt.
Mm.
And he's saying that sometimes you have to kill your enemy and sometimes you can just buy them. I paid John Hurt to come and join my thing, and the two of us, between us together, we will take over all of Greece.
Yeah.
The most dangerous thing about you, Hercules, as a legend, is that you are a man without a price and therefore cannot be bought.
Mm.
Because he's saying essentially because, you know, you have honour. And I'm like, but he is a mercenary.
And he's been doing all of this for the money.
But I just like the idea of a man without price cannot be bought is a really good line, even if it's like...
Yeah, true. But, I mean, I suppose the argument is that he has been reduced to being a mercenary and doing stuff for money because he's lost his sense of honour because he thinks he killed his family. And then when he discovers that that's not true, he rediscovers his stuff.
You can tell it's an American 15.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of people getting, you know, heads chopped off and stabbed and set on fire and whatever. And there's exactly one fuck in the film which says, this is a 15. Because that's what they do. And the point is that they include that word because they can.
Yeah.
It had absolutely no point. It added nothing to the scene that it was in. And it just really makes you realise that it's not used in the rest of the film at all.
Yeah.
And which is just really silly. It's like, just because you're allowed to...
I did that in my debut novel.
Really?
Yeah, I think I did it in both my first two novels. There's one fuck in each of the books.
Right. Oh dear.
So I did it too. Yeah, fair. Okay, moving on.
So... The thing that I've been annoyingly pushing
which was the most
the
interesting
thing
about the
which
film.
Which was the most interesting thing about the film, I definitely agree, is that early on, we get an indication that the tasks, the 12 tasks that Hercules is famous for doing, aren't necessarily what they're described to be by tellers of tales like Eros.
Yeah.
Because
so it's all been exaggerated.
Because Hercules goes to one of the kings, I forget, the king of Athens?
In
a flashback?
In the flashback, he's coming back from having killed the Hydra.
The Hydra.
And when he reveals the heads, they're actually people in masks.
People in Hydra masks,
yes.
So what...
So the suggestion is that none of it is actually fantastical at all. Monsters aren't real. And it's all just been made up to increase the legend of Hercules.
Now, I presume it's Ian McShane, it might be Rufus Sewell, one of the two of them says, all along we encouraged people to play along and believe that he's the son of Zeus.
Yeah.
That they have deliberately created legends in their own time. I don't know if you'd be able to address this. Maybe some of the people we know who... know have done more classics might know more stuff about this, but I don't know how much of the telling of people like Achilles was going on during the time of Achilles, and it was being used as a way to try and scare and influence the people that those armies were going up against, that, you know, we have the great hero X, or on how much of it was written about, you know, decades or hundreds of years later in retrospect,
I don't know.
People were the son of gods and had these kind of powers. But what's really interesting in this film is, on the one hand, you've got all this incredibly bombastic epicness, and on the other hand, you've got this bit where you're constantly on the edge of thinking, oh, this is the point where it's revealed to be the supernatural. There's this whole thing about
the supposed bad guy is doing it back to them, because the scout who's been sent to spy on the warlord Rhesus comes back and goes, oh my god, he's got hundreds of centaurs.
Yep.
And he is actually a centaur.
Yep.
And they go on and on about it. And then it turns out that he's actually on Rhesus's side and has been telling them nonsense.
Oh,
and then
I didn't know
in
that.
The fog and the silhouettes with the sun behind them, it makes it look as though the people are actually centaurs, and then it turns out they're just riding horses, and it's the perspective and stuff. So it's actually
really
clever because they're using the same tactic against them.
But what's really clever in that is that when that scout turns up, you get a short few seconds scene of visualising what he's describing, in which... they really are centaurs.
Yes, yes.
And
well,
again,
like right at the beginning.
And again, the special effects are
absolutely
excellent.
Brilliant. And it's like exactly at the beginning with the voiceover of Aeolus telling the tales. You see the dramatisation of
the Hydra
and the boar and
the
lion as if they really are supernatural monsters.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it turns out it's just Aeolus telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
And Hercules wanders around with a lion skin.
Yeah.
Wearing a lion skin
and big
all
teeth
the way through
in his club.
Exactly.
But what's interesting is the two things that are never really resolved as to whether or not it's actually supernatural, because the film pulls the rug out from you a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped it at one point, at the point where I said, about halfway through, the camera pans up and you see the leader of the bad guys at that point in time up on a hill, and he looks like a centaur, and then it's like, oh, it's not. And I paused it to hit the loo just before that happened. And I was like, oh, halfway through the film, and we reveal for the first time supernatural is real. And I kind of sat down and hit play and went, oh, no, it's not. And the only two things that we're never entirely sure of is Ian McShane.
Yes.
Because he keeps saying, he says, you know, I'm going to be killed by a flaming spear.
Yeah.
And a flaming spear is going right for him up until the point when Hercules grabs it. So,
yeah.
That's a very specific thing. So, maybe, not sure about that one. But the other one is that Hercules does have an inhuman level of strength.
Well,
I mean, you could argue
there's the stories of, you know, mothers pulling cars off children and that kind of thing. And
so, Whether that's just, you know,
he is quite buff.
He's got a lot of good genetics, and he's been doing. he's been working out for 30 years or whatever it is. That you know, yeah, maybe. But we don't see any direct evidence of magic. But we're still a little bit.
It's just on the cusp.
We're
yeah.
still, I think, a little bit left in the maybe.
And I like that.
I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
I normally hate that. Yeah. But I liked it in this.
You liked everything in this because you were ensorcelled.
I was completely ensorcelled by this film. Oh, yeah. Dear. The closing of the film, the last lines are delivered again by Ian Shane. And I wish I'd written the whole quote down, but he says, essentially, we don't know whether Hercules is directly the son of Zeus, but either way, he's a great hero. At the end of the day, does it matter?
Yeah.
And that's the important question, which is, if you're using, I don't know, propaganda, essentially, to help you do good stuff, then if he's not actually a demigod, is it really important if it's getting the job done? And
yeah.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
So it does, despite trying extremely hard for an hour and 45 minutes to make you not think, it does make you think a little bit.
Yes. Ah, good. Excellent, yes.
Because it's mostly a park your brain before you start
film
in the best possible way.
Very true. But yeah, you had this moment.
Yes. Do you have anything else before we do diversity?
Don't think so.
Right, do you want to do... gender.
So, there are only two female characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's Hercules' wife in the flashback, but she has half a line, stands around looking pretty, and then gets fridged.
And his daughter, similarly fridged.
Yeah.
There are a couple of belly dancers at one point that don't have any lines.
And a couple of groupies in the
tavern
at the start who just make googly eyes at Hercules and swoon a bit.
Yeah.
Other than that, there are two female characters, but they are both great. So there is Ergenia, who is the John Hurt's daughter,
mm-hmm.
who is skilled in medicine, sees through the legend, but respects Hercules' abilities anyway. She is an excellent mother. She's doing her best under difficult circumstances. I thought she was pretty cool. And then you have Atalanta, who is the token female member of the crew, basically one of the boys, but also wanders around in a leather miniskirt and a bare midriff, which I could have done without.
Rufus Sewell says about...
Atalanta.
The first one.
Oh, Ergenia.
That it's nice to have a woman come and sit with us for dinner because Atalanta doesn't really count.
Yes, very true.
It's like, really?
Yeah, because she's basically just one of the boys.
John Hurt's King says when he's hiring the group to go out and attack... Rhesus, it goes up to Atalanta and goes, you know, it's fighting's not really woman's stuff. At which point she does the double arrow trick, pulls two arrows out of a quiver, fires them both and knocks the helmet off two guards. And John Hurt goes, I stand corrected.
Yeah. So she's pretty awesome, but in a very stereotypical way.
Mm-hmm.
But they do reflect different aspects of female power, the two of them. So I think that's pretty good. So, you know, some good things, some not so good things.
Mm.
Interesting thing about Dwayne Johnson is that he is nearly always the protagonist hero of the films that he is in.
Mm-hmm.
And he is half black and half Samoan.
Yep.
So that's kind of awesome. But the only other non-white person in it, I think, was the actor playing Aeolus, who was his nephew. And other than that, I think it was 100% white. So it's not great for diversity. But I think Dwayne Johnson is doing a good job.
Yes, but, you know, one could make an argument that the Greeks would have all been white. But
well, true.
Yeah, but yes, it was very white. There's no doubt about that. And I don't have any other diversity stuff because there really isn't any. It's an action film.
Yes.
Rather than a, you know, talky film.
Yes.
It's an action, quip-laden, epic extravaganza.
Yes.
And so it doesn't really have the kind of slow emotional beats you would get if you had more interesting people in it, maybe. Maybe I'm making a terrible excuse. It's possible I'm making a terrible excuse.
Yeah, you know, it's not great.
But, yeah. But, yeah, I don't have anything else, do you?
No. So I think that about wraps it up for this month's discussion. So it's time for the ratings.
Suddenly got to the end. Wow. Okay.
What do you mean?
Well, it felt like we've been having this epic long discussion. Now suddenly it's coming to an end. But okay.
Okay.
This is what happens.
So it's time for the ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. Dave, what is your rating for the 2014 live action Hercules?
Well, I'm completely
ensorcelled,
so I'm going to give it 4.5.
Wow. Okay. That is, yeah, that's a lot.
I strongly suspect that if I watched it again, it would be much closer to 2.5 to 3. But right now,
okay,
it's 4.5.
I mean, you're still only, you know, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
After having seen it, so the ensorcelment is still strong.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you?
Well, I've given it 3.5, but I have to say that the experience of watching you watching the movie was definitely 5 stars.
So it must have been, because I was sitting there with the headphones on, and every so often I would just burst out laughing, and that must have been very weird.
There was a lot of great reactions from you throughout the film. And I obviously knew what was happening, because I could see it on the screen, and I had only watched it 2 days ago. But yes, so 3.5 for the film, absolute 5 stars for watching you watching it.
Right. Oh, did you still love it?
I mean, I think I definitely loved it from watching you watch it more so than watching it myself. So now I am in the ensorcelled zone.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, but when I watched it on my own while you were out on Tuesday, not so much.
Yeah, I definitely want to watch it with some dudes.
Okay.
And not just male dudes, but, you know,
yeah.
Kind of bros and beer and popcorn kind of.
Well, it's definitely that kind of film.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's leave that behind now. What are we doing next month?
Oh, very different. I am taking us again into the slightly fantasy, but this is modern day-ish slightly fantasy Stephen King, but not horrific.
What?
The 1983 Christopher Walken starring version of The Dead Zone.
Okay. It's not horrible?
No.
Sounds horrible.
No.
Okay. Fair enough. We shall find out.
Okay, that wraps it up for this month's episode of We Shall Love It Tomorrow. As always, many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you everybody for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email us at willyoustillloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And remember, you can buy our merch at bit.ly/loveittomorrowpodcast with hyphens where the spaces would be.
And join us next month to find out what I think of The Dead Zone and whether or not Dave still loves it after our discussion.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.